At this time, I believe we're ready to address item number one. This is the trial court improvement request for fiscal year 11-12, an action item requested by the Superior Court of San Francisco. And I'll turn it over to Justice Miller from E&P.
Thank you, Chief Justice. The Council's Executive and Planning Committee scheduled this special meeting today to address the request by San Francisco Superior Court for emergency funding. The court's request indicated that the court plans to close 25 courtrooms and lay off 177 of its staff as of October 3rd. Because the Council's next regularly scheduled business meeting was not until October 28th, the committee decided it was necessary and prudent to have a special meeting in September so that the court's request could be addressed in a timely manner. On behalf of the Executive and Planning Committee, I want to thank all of the Judicial Council members who rearranged their schedules to participate in this special meeting. Some are here, as we can see, in person, and others have made arrangements to appear by telephone. As we all will agree, this is an important meeting. And as we have heard, it is certainly very important to the City of San Francisco, the Superior Court of San Francisco, the people they serve, and the lawyers who practice in their courts. And I appreciate the public comments that we heard today. I think it, again, reaffirms that important nature of what we do here as a judicial council. The San Francisco's Superior Court is requesting that the Judicial Council allocate $2.5 million from the Trial Court Improvement Fund's special reserve that is available for urgent needs. The report to the Council that was posted on our public website earlier this week provides an overview and explanation of the allocations that have been made from the Urgent Needs Fund over the past several years, the criteria that have been used in the past to consider requests from the trial courts, and the financial situation of the San Francisco Superior Court. What I believe is also important to note is that for me, and I believe as council members, this report is somewhat unique from the ones that we have seen in the past. It's not being presented by an advisory group. It's not being presented by a staff member. It's merely background information and options for us to consider. It's not before us as a recommendation. Having said that, though, I just want to stress a few points so we keep them in the forefront during our discussions and the decisions that we make today. As explained in the report, the Urgent Needs Reserve Fund is established by statute, the same statute that establishes the Trial Court Improvement Fund, Government Code Section 77209. The statute provides the Judicial Council shall reserve funds for projects by transferring 1% of the amount appropriated for support for operation of the trial courts to the Trial Court Improvement Fund. At least one half of this amount shall be set aside as a reserve that shall not be allocated prior to March 15th of each year unless allocated to a court or court for urgent needs. No statute or case defines urgent needs, nor explains under what circumstances or process the council may allocate money to a court from the urgent needs reserve. The statute authorizes the council to delegate to the administrative director of the courts the administration of the fund with appropriate guidelines. Just a little review. In 2002, the council approved guidelines for the improvement fund, which included a definition of urgent needs and a process for courts to request and for funding to be allocated from the urgent needs reserve. Those guidelines were last revised in 2007. Council members will clearly recall that we had a discussion at our August meeting of this year, at which time it was noted that the guidelines that apply to the Urgent Needs Fund were in need of further review and revision. Simply stated, as we all agreed, they were outdated in light of the current fiscal conditions affecting the entire court system. At our August meeting, the council directed staff to work with trial court presiding judges and court executive officers and then come back to us at our October meeting with revised guidelines, both a process for requesting emergency funding and the criteria for considering emergency funding, and that the ultimate decision with regards to the appropriation of those funds would be made by the council and not by the administrative director or staff. However, in preparing for today's meeting, one of my concerns has been that we do not yet have revised guidelines. And as a judge, I think we would all agree that we'd like some type of a precedent to base our decision upon. The requirement in Government Code Section 77009 for guidelines about administration of the improvement fund applies, at least it seems to apply, where the council delegates to the administrative director the responsibility to manage the fund. Where the council acts directly to allocate money from the fund, there doesn't appear to be any requirement that it first adopt criteria or establish a process. The statute simply provides that money in the reserve may be allocated to courts for urgent needs. Therefore, the council has a discretion to decide whether a request for emergency funding from the improvement fund warrants an allocation from the urgent needs reserve, and if so, in what amount? Again, if we look at the options, again, just options, the court could apply the current criteria, the council could take action to rescind the current criteria, the council could act to modify those criteria, or we can decide what those criteria are for the urgent needs for today. In short, we have the discretion as the Judicial Council to decide what course of action we should take. And again, remember that the report is not a recommendation. It is a set of possible options, and I'm sure there'll be other discussions today as to what other options we may consider. We have before us the request from San Francisco, and we have the agreement that was worked out between the court and the AOC, and as we will find, as to what should be presented to the court for consideration. Even though I don't believe the agreement is binding on the council, it reflects the results of many discussions with the court as to what would be proposed to the council. Again, it is one of the options that is before us today, and as you have read in the report, there are many options in that regard. Lastly, just two other things. What we do today is important, as I've indicated, for the city of San Francisco and the litigants, and it's also important as a potential precedent for other courts. As I walked into the meeting today, I happened to meet two attorneys, and again, they emphasized how important our decision was today for the litigants and the individuals that they serve, and also that we as a judicial branch have an obligation to adjudicate the matters that come before the courts, both criminal, civil, family, juvenile, all of the different matters that come before the court, and to promote equal and ready access to the courts for all of the residents of California. Lastly, I did want to mention one aspect that was not in the report, was not one of the options, and that is a statement in the agreement between the AOC and the court with regards to longer-term solutions and the need for the Judicial Council to seek ongoing revenue solutions. I believe we would all agree that the Council has always made it its top priority to seek additional funding and necessary funding to keep our courts open and accessible. We have all heard the Chief Justice many times stress that that is her top priority for the branch. This is historically what the Judicial Council has done. We have provided the leadership in this particular area in working with the legislature and the individual legislators. We will continue to provide that leadership. We will continue to seek budget solutions with both the legislature and the governor. Also, you will note that one of the agreements concerns the county-based, county-retained fees with regards to complex cases. We just have to remember our last meeting where this was discussed by PCLC. They discussed it, they dealt with it, and they confirmed that the Judicial Council, as one of its continuing priorities, is continuing to look at the imposition of uniform statewide fees. And again, it is a high priority of the Judicial Council to continue to look at ongoing revenues. With those in mind, I'd like to turn it over to our finance director to give us further explanation with regards to the funding request.
Before we do that, Zlatko, let me ask if any council members have any comments or questions from Justice Miller's statement. Seeing none, I'll... Not yet.
I've
been to Justice Miller's comments, but go ahead, Judge Klein.
Well, I appreciate your pointing out that what's presented here is not necessarily a recommendation. It's just a description of some options we might consider, and I think that's important for clarification. But I did have a question about the phrase that's used throughout this report, that the courts have a constitutional obligation to adjudicate all matters that come before the court, and what the genesis of that was and why that language was chosen. I see it almost in every item here. It didn't seem like it was necessary for us to deal with that subject. Now, it's in my view, it's quite a complex issue, and I didn't see the need for it. I was wondering what the genesis is and why you felt it was necessary to repeat it in all these phrases.
And I'm certainly open to any others who want to respond in that regard, but one of the concerns was that with the providing of this money, we wanted to make sure that there was a commitment that the court would still perform its functions, such as civil, criminal, family law, juvenile, probate, and all of those aspects. So it may need some further definition in that regard, but it wasn't to mean anything more than that, that they provide service to the citizens that come.
Because I understand, but there may come a time when the courts lack funding where we may just have to make decisions on priorities about what can be adjudicated. I mean, if our budgets are substantially curtailed, we may not be able to adjudicate every type of case. And I just want to make sure that option is open. And that's because I know some courts have brought to us the fact they might consider eliminating a whole area, such as was represented by judges from San Joaquin, who indicated they might just close down small claims. I don't want to eliminate those type of options with some broad language like this.
And I think that's a good example with San Joaquin, because I think that if they do come before us, then we would be making the same types of discussions and some of the same types of contingencies with them, that based upon whatever amount of funds that we provide to them out of this fund, that there are still, on our part, a need to make sure that they're going to provide the services that this money is being given to them for. So if it needs some further definition to clarify that, I don't have any problem with that.
Or maybe just a more general phrase, necessary to meet the court's functions, and let it go at that. It was just this...
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
Chief, this is Mara Baxter in Fresno.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. Go ahead.
I want to bring to the attention of the Judicial Council discussions and action taken by the Policy Committee at its August 19th meeting, where we discussed various proposals to provide additional support to the trial courts, those in financial distress as a result of the budget reductions. And after a great deal of discussion, the committee directed the Office of Governmental Affairs to continue pursuing avenues to enhance revenue, to pursue those avenues with the legislature and with the interested parties to determine if there is a viable way to enhance the judicial branch budget. But in doing so, the committee's guiding principles to the Office of Governmental Affairs were that, number one, the fee increases should be uniform and apply statewide and not to just select courts. And that, number two, that the fee should be allocated on a statewide basis and not retained in the court in which they were collected. Now, Justice Ashman Gerst and Judges Herman and Smith, Edith Mackay, and Michael Roddy were among the committee members participating, and perhaps they, along with Kurt Child, may wish to comment on that recent action that was taken.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. I don't believe there's any forthcoming comment. I think what you stated is clear about the action of PCLC, which is a reflection of past practices of judicial counsel, period.
That's correct.
Thank you. I believe Judge...
Chief, this is Jim Herman, and I just would add that the position of each and every one of the committee members was very strong on these points.
Thank you, Judge Herman. Judge Wesley?
I think maybe I'd call in Chief.
I was just wondering whether or not the options that were outlined in option one have ever been applied to a court before when they've gotten emergency funding.
Well, there have been these elements applied to other courts, particularly the Placer Court, the Glenn County Court, that had a request from the presiding judge for emergency funds, and those were paid back. Those were audited. A number of the provisions that were in here were applied to both of those courts.
Well, one of those courts at least was a different situation where the CEO was no longer there, and you came in as an acting CEO. I don't recall another time when we put the executive and planning committee in charge of the court, having a court report to it. I don't recall ever seeing that before, and I'm asking if that's ever happened before.
I think on those courts, the full council received reports because it was a council action in terms of providing oversight for those courts.
And I think that this leads us to the Placer Court. I know Jody Patel was directly involved with that, and I remember those. So we can talk about that later. I think that's valid when we talk about the option, certainly. But if at this point, without comment to Justice Miller's report and the comments raised by PCLC, I'd like to turn it over to the panel to begin this, and I'm sure we'll have a pretty robust discussion thereafter. Zlatko?
Yes, thank you, Chief, and members of the Council. Much of what I'm presenting you've already heard, but we'll just go through it briefly and get to the bottom line numbers. As you know, the court request indicates a $20.4 million need over the next 3 years, initially proposing 25 civil courtrooms to be closed and 177 staff laid off. In submitting their request for trial court improvement funding on September 1st, they requested the $2.5 million, which in essence would reduce their proposed closures from 25 to 14 and the number of layoffs from 177 to 75. The court has indicated they've taken a number of measures to reduce costs over the past several years, including hiring freezes, staff furloughs, operational changes regarding overnight bail, renegotiating contracts, saving $1.2 million, other operating expense savings in attempt to manage their fund balance. And with respect to Government Code Section 77209 regarding the emergency fund, as Justice Miller indicated, the requirement is that 0.5% of the transfer to the trial court trust fund needs to be set aside for urgent needs. Again, we have no statute that defines the specific allocation, only with respect to urgent needs. We do have a current definition of urgent need that's there before you. And again, there are various criteria that have been used in the past with respect to evaluation of emergency funding requests. I think most notably you'll see that at the bottom there, layoffs, mandatory furloughs, reduced hours, and court closures. The funds are to be provided to avoid those types of things. Like we believe we've discussed that there's probably not a single court in the state that's not facing one of these four issues. So this is not unique to San Francisco, and every court is facing similar funding problems. We know that the allocation is one time only, and the courts must exhaust all available reserves, not otherwise dedicated to critical needs. We think that's an important factor in looking at their request. Again, there are issues where we, in our prior review, would look at what steps have been taken to address the reductions, why aren't the resources available, are there other funding opportunities, and determining what the public service impacts are. As Justice Miller did indicate, we have been directed, staff has been directed to redevelop a new process for evaluating deficiency requests. I think it is important that the times have changed, and we do need to look at new criteria and a new process to make sure that it's transparent and available to all the courts that need it. With respect to the funding, I want to focus your attention on the fiscal year 2011-2012 figures.
our conclusion in terms of looking at their current year issue is that with no action, the court will finish with it would finish with a negative fund balance of $1 million if no action were taken. At the 177 staff layoff, they would get to almost an $11 million fund balance. With a revised 75 staff layoff, and assuming that they get the $2.5 million, they would be at a $6.5 million fund balance, which is approximately 8% of their operations budget. So I get to the options. First option is to allocate the $2.5 million as determined as an urgent need by the council. There are a number of contingencies that are identified in the report. I won't go through them as they will be discussed, I'm sure, at length after my presentation concludes. Option two is to not provide the court any additional funds and direct them to take all necessary means to not end the year in the fund but in a negative fund condition, including using reserves that they currently have of $4.9 million, or wait until we complete our work with respect to the new criteria and then reevaluate the request in light of the new criterion process that's developed. And so with that ends my presentation.
Thank you. Ron.
Yes, thank you, Chief Justice and members of the council. I want to preliminarily indicate my appreciation and gratification to everyone who has been involved in the conversations with the San Francisco court to try to find a path forward for the court and for the civil justice system in San Francisco, given the gravity of the situation and the pending actions that were going to have to be taken. Particularly the presiding judge, assistant presiding judge, the court executive, Mr. Yoon, the CFO, as well as AOC staff, Zlatko Theodorovich, Kurt Child, Chad Finke, and Mary Roberts. These were all good faith conversations, again, with a single goal of trying to find a pathway to find a way forward for the San Francisco court to try to avoid the difficulties that the civil justice system was going to be faced with. You can see on page 7 are all of the elements that resulted in the discussions between the court and the AOC to, again, find an option or other options that would be available to be able to close the $6 plus million gap that the court had identified as the problem in the current year. I would say, as Zlatko mentioned in the beginning of his presentation, that the problem was really presented in the letter from Judge Feinstein to the council as a three-year problem, with the problem getting worse next year and then not quite as bad the following year. And it was presented as a three-year problem. The element of the agreement that describes ongoing efforts to continue to identify restoration and additional fees and those kinds of things were very important, I think, to the presiding judge and the court in terms of being willing to discuss a current year solution rather than a three-year solution. That was a major issue for the court to identify. With regard to the agreement itself, what is before you today is the first bullet of the agreement, which is the allocation of $2.5 million in urgent needs from the Improvement Fund reserve. I do support that. It is what we discussed with the court in terms of what we would bring to the council as an option or an alternative, along with the court's use of all of their available resources to, again, be able to at least reduce the impact of the budget, the budget problems to the court. I will say again, as Justice Miller did, this is not a I did not sign a binding agreement that bound the council, and I want to make that clear in the discussions that I had with the court. It was, you know, whatever we can agree to between the court and the AOC, we will bring to the council for consideration as a as an option to, again, avoid the drastic reductions that were being discussed. I'll also say, just in terms of the options, that, again, I support the allocation of the $2.5 million. The other criteria that are listed there are options for the council that I think are appropriate for consideration, as you are accountable for the funds that you're about to allocate, if you do, and requiring reporting and some level of plan seems appropriate. It is not a part of the agreement that I signed. It is something for you to decide. And again, I support the recommendation on the emergency fund allocation as we discussed. With regard to provision 7 of the options that are presented under option 1, Mr. Kearney's right. I you know, whether there is a requirement for payback of some or all of the $2.5 million after a 3-year period is something for you to consider. It seems to me that given that this was a presented as a 3-year problem, and this $2.5 million is suggested to offset the problem to try to get through these difficult times, that reviewing that in 3 years or at 14-15 would make sense rather than doing it annually between now and then. And again, that's a question for you if you want to consider the requirement of paying back all or some of the money at some point in the future or not. And again, to Judge Wesley's comment about precedent, that was a requirement of the Glenn and Placer courts, and those emergency funds were paid back. I'll tell you directly that was not a part of the conversation that I had with the court, so I know they have some concerns about that provision at all, and you will not see it in the agreement. It was not discussed. So that's an option for you as a part of your oversight and responsibility in allocating the funds, whether that's something that you'd like to consider or not. I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone has.
I don't see any questions at this time, Ron, but I'd ask at this point then, Mr. Yu.
I had a question. In the case of Placer, were there restrictions on the use of the court's fund balances and reserve funds?
The court was being managed by the administrative director of the courts through Jody Patel, so it was directly managed.
So that's how it was handled. Mm-hmm. In any other situation, were there restrictions of this type?
I don't recall in the history other than those two courts.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? If not, I'd ask Mr. Ewan on behalf of San Francisco Superior Court, who wishes to say a few words.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice and members of the council. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you today in support of the agreement that was reached by the San Francisco Superior Court and the Administrative Office of the Courts for $2.5 million in emergency funding to help with our budget crisis. I want to first express my gratitude to Justice Miller and EMP for taking this issue up, but also to Mr. Overholt and his staff, Mr. Theodorovich and Mr. Chang, for the hard work that they've done in bringing this item before you and getting the report ready. I must express, however, my extreme dismay over the fact that the properly executed agreement, which was signed on August 30th, 2011, by incoming interim director Ron Overholt, and by me the following day on August 31st, 2011, incredulously has not been provided to the council for your consideration. The agreement, as was indicated by Mr. Overholt, was executed after substantial negotiation and in good faith.
Allow me
to clarify what my statements are. Thank you for that, though. Let me carry on and indulge me for a few more seconds. It was our understanding that the Judicial Council had given Mr. Overholt the authority to negotiate on your behalf. In light of this delegated duty, it is outrageous that this agreement was not presented to you as executed by both parties. Mr. Overholt expressly told me that the agreement would be provided to the Judicial Council today on September 9th for your consideration and approval. And more than 100 employees at my court who have received layoff notices are eagerly awaiting today's discussions based on an expectation that there would be legitimate consideration of the merits of the signed agreement. Instead, frankly, what we have here is a charade, and it is frankly an embarrassment not only for the council but for the incoming interim director of the AOC. My question to you is this. Does Mr. Overholt have the authority from the Judicial Council as he represented to the court during these good faith negotiations? And if so, then why is it that the agreement remains cloaked in darkness in favor of last-minute options that are before you in your report that have neither been discussed or agreed upon by the court that it affects? Justice Miller stated that the agreement is before you, and several of you have just indicated to me that it is. And you're right, a version is before you. But to shed light on the legitimate outcomes of the negotiations that took place, allow me to pass around for each of you a copy of the original signed agreement for your consideration and anticipated approval just a few moments from now. As this copy of the original signed agreement is making its way around the room, once you see it, it should be clear to you now that the attachment F of the report is a doctored version of a fully executed agreement. It's a doctored version that was never presented to Presiding Judge Catherine Feinstein or to me. I knew about it, but I never saw it. In fact, the 47-page report that it was attached to was posted publicly and provided to the news media less than 48 hours before today's meeting. The court, sadly, was not given courtesy of advance review of this document, or, frankly, the content of the report, which includes so-called option one, in complete contravention to our fully executed deal. The recommendations to the Judicial Council, which were made by Mr. Overholt and members of the Executive and Planning Committee, were derived from whole cloth, which sadly demonstrates that the Judicial Council negotiated in bad faith through its emissary. This conduct is shameful, and it is unbecoming of any representative from the world's largest court system, let alone from the incoming interim director. Unfortunately, representations and promises made by the AOC are apparently as meaningless as an official signature from the AOC. And unfortunately for us, the San Francisco Superior Court, this is a damaging pattern that we have now fallen prey to twice in less than a year and a half. As you know, 16 months ago, my court was poised to issue 122 layoffs and close around 16 courtrooms to deal with last year's budget cuts. We did not move forward with those layoffs and closures because the AOC feared it would unravel a deal with the legislature. And on the very day that our layoff notices were going to be issued, they were already stuffed in envelopes and ready to go. The AOC pleaded for us to not downsize and instead hope that the future improves. Well, respectfully, council members, here we are. And we now know that the future has not gotten better. It has not improved. It has only gotten worse. Had we moved forward with our reduction plan 16 months ago, none of us would be here today discussing this issue, because those layoffs would have saved the court $15 million, which would have solved our $6.2 million deficit. The original signed agreement provided $2.5 million in emergency funds to reduce civil courtroom closures from 25 to 14, and to reduce layoffs from 177 employees to 75 employees. However, the AOC, the joint AOC and EMP report, recommends so-called option one, which would impose conditions on the court that we find totally unacceptable and frankly insulting. For example, option one injects a level of alarming uncertainty over the amount of emergency funds the court could receive to mitigate reductions in staff and access to justice in San Francisco. Option one indicates that the Judicial Council could designate some, quote, other amounts instead of $2.5 million, a condition which would interfere with our efforts to solve a $6.2 million deficit. We cannot responsibly plan when we don't know how much money we have to address our shortfall. Furthermore, let me make clear that I cannot and I will not subject my employees anymore to a yo-yo effect caused by this prolonged uncertainty over whether the AOC and the Judicial Council will have the will and demonstrated commitment to help trial courts like us keep our doors open and our staff employed. While the report focuses solely on the court's request, on the first bullet, as Mr. Overholt mentioned, for $2.5 million in emergency funds and the meddlesome strings that it would attach to those funds, the agreement we reached with the AOC also contained other significant provisions, five others that are not mentioned in the report. For example, the court agreed to accept an existing $650,000 in grant money from the AOC to partially fund two complex litigation departments scheduled to close on October 3rd. This provision has been ignored in option one of the agreement. It's not mentioned at all in the report. In addition, the agreement included a significant provision that could help not only San Francisco, but all trial courts throughout the state that seek new funding solutions to overcome persistent budget cuts that are jeopardizing access to justice and the careers of hundreds of dedicated court professionals. The agreement pledged the council to work to advocate for legislation that would allow any county trial court to generate and retain certain new revenues. This commitment was made not merely to San Francisco, but to every trial court throughout the state that may have innovative ideas for bringing revenue into courts resulting from services of special value to its citizenry and to its attorneys. That significant provision is also entirely ignored in option one before you. Forgive my cynicism, but it may be my belief that this provision is one of the main reasons why the agreement in its original form, never made it across your desk. We heard earlier that PCLC already rejected this concept. And to some degree, I respect the notion that one can walk into a courthouse in San Diego and pay the same amount as one in MODOC. But when courts are about to close under this model, something is wrong. The thought of trial courts achieving financial independence from the AOC is apparently a scenario too radical to consider, let alone support, by actively seeking the passage of such legislation. The time has come, and the momentum is building within the branch for such critically needed outside-the-box thinking, with or without the support of the Judicial Council and the AOC. In fact, I hope you recognize that the breach of trust on display here today actually fuels the seeds of dissent and the urgent quest of reforms from within the branch. Instead of working together as one branch to seek solutions to state budget cuts that threaten our autonomy and duties as the third branch of government in California, the Judicial Council and the AOC seem to prefer thwarting creative and viable solutions at the state and county levels. It appears to us that the Council and the AOC value your unfettered autonomy and control over the actual delivery of broad access to justice for our state's citizenry. Let me be clear. I will not allow my court to succumb to unnecessary micromanagement of our financial affairs. The seven conditions outlined in the report before you simply amount to an unwelcome, insulting infringement on the local authority of the San Francisco Superior Court. Frankly speaking, all we do at the court, and Judge Pines, you hinted on this already, all we do at this court, and for the sake of the branch as a whole, I hope all that other courts do is to use their funds to carry out our constitutional obligations. What else would we do with them? More importantly, the concepts that are, the conditions that are presented to you are in direct conflict with Rules 10.603 and 10.610 of the California Rules of Court, which this very body has ratified. I have already made clear that any emergency funding received will be used to keep courtrooms open. In fact, that was in the presentation from AOC staff. And I have already committed to improving collections practices and to continue cost-saving measures. You can count on the integrity implicit in my signature. There are some who may try to persuade you that San Francisco is in need of micromanaging because we are a mismanaged court. I definitely take issue with anyone's claim that we are mismanaged. Let me tell you this. A mismanaged organization does not go from $280,000 in reserves to having almost $5 million in reserves in just 12 months. As we have said for several months, the court needs to maintain these reserves to manage a three-year cumulative deficit of $20.4 million. But let me also explain the other reasons why a reserve are necessary. There are an assortment of self-proclaimed court budget experts who neither work in the branch nor manage a court, but often comment publicly, and their public comments imply that reserves need to be spent. Well, let me say this. They are dismally misinformed about how courts rely on fund balances to manage our expenses. We are not a state executive branch agency, and as such, when we make payments, we don't have the backing of the entire state treasury. The reserves, our local court reserves, serve as our treasury. And due to persistent cash flow issues, they are used to keep programs and services going. Vendors that include court-appointed attorneys, security and janitorial providers, and jurors are paid from our reserves before we receive either reimbursement from the AOC or an allocation from the AOC. People seeking access to justice deserve clean and secure courthouses. People who work in courthouses deserve safe and clean working conditions. More importantly, litigants who need dependency counsel deserve attorneys who practice at a very high level without concern and worry over whether or not they will be paid. And we seek to avoid delaying payment to jurors for their service just because there are a shortage of funds. What type of jury service would that be? These impacts are real, and I, for one, know this because when we made the policy decision a year and a half ago to bring our reserves down to only $280,000, we were actually forced to delay payments to vendors, including all of the folks that I just mentioned. In one case, and this was certainly not right, but in one case, we delayed a payment, a multi-million dollar payment to a vendor for over 9 months. It is not a way to do business in good faith, and I am committed to making sure that it does not happen again, and that is why reserves cannot be spent down to the bone. 2 weeks ago, in this very room and setting, Mr. Overholt made it known to all of you and to the entire world listening and watching that an offer was made to San Francisco. In fact, some of you even expanded on this during your meeting, and it was made very clear to us in the meeting that the ball was in our court. Well, we reached an agreement with Mr. Overholt. I signed the agreement as the San Francisco Superior Court's principal, and I assume that Mr. Overholt signed as the council's principal. The bottom line is the San Francisco Superior Court needs budgetary relief in the short term and funding assurances in the long term. Some may say we have become a rogue court, and others may say we are doing more harm to the branch than good. I say if it's a result of me fighting for jobs at my court and access to justice in San Francisco, you can call me whatever you'd like. Respectfully, we have bet on the Judicial Council and the AOC before. Most recently, 16 months ago, we bet on the Judicial Council and the AOC, and those bets have failed us. The challenge for the Council and the AOC now is to find $300 million. These are your numbers, not mine. $300 million in trial court funding solutions next year. Unfortunately and respectfully, it is not a bet I am willing to make, and I certainly will not make it if it means the Judicial Council and the AOC will be micromanaging my court. I have the very significant concern that the Council and the AOC have brought us here today to make an example of our court so as to stifle future dissent from courts across the state. However, any judicial entity that does not listen to opposing viewpoints is frankly not judicial at all. This body could easily live up to the conditions of the agreement signed by Mr. Overholt and myself. In fact, such actions have been done before by the administrative director. The disbursement of the requested $2.5 million is very, very small in the amount of funds available to you. It is long overdue for the council and the AOC to live up to your commitment to serving the courts. for the sake of the 485 employees at the San Francisco Superior Court, the 14,000 lawyers who are based in San Francisco and practice daily in San Francisco, and more importantly, the 805,000 residents who reside in San Francisco and deserve a local judicial branch of government and access to justice, I can only hope that you today, the Judicial Council, will do the right thing and withdraw the financing option one before you, which was presented less than 48 hours ago. We stand ready to resume immediate good faith communications based on the agreement reached with the Judicial Council's negotiator and I. And I'm happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
Justice Hall.
Yes, thank you, Chief. Mr. Ewan, I want to make sure I understand two things. First of all, I take your statement as being a statement of the official position of San Francisco Superior Court. Is that correct,
sir? That is exactly correct.
All right. And I take it also, well, I want to make sure I understand that, that if the Judicial Council votes in favor of option one and the conditions there, is it the court's position that you will not accept the money from the council?
I think that's a fair question, but I would like to turn that into a greater policy question as to whether or not you, the council, believe that that is an amendment to two rules of court that you have already passed that specifically state that the authority to manage a local trial court rests with the presiding judge and the court executive officer.
Well, I don't think that answers the question I put to you. Will San Francisco Superior not take the money if these conditions are imposed?
We will have to evaluate and consider it if that's the action you take today, and we hope that you give us the courtesy of the time to do that, considering that we've only had less than 48 hours to review these options, will get back to you on that.
The answer then is maybe.
The answer is possibly. I can tell you right now that if they are word for word, the conditions, the seven conditions that are listed in option one, it is more resoundingly a likely no than yes.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chief, if I could, just to point out, if you haven't noticed already, the agreement that Mr. Yoon passed out, which was the original agreement, and the agreement that's in your packet, that has the technical changes of striking administrative office of the courts and inserting, more appropriately from a technical perspective, trial court improvement funds, since that's where these emergency funds are from, and then striking the $650,000 and inserting $645,960 from the administrative efficiency and modernization fund. Those are the technical adjustments that were made. And I had called Mr. Yoon and left a message that I would like to make these changes with his agreement, and the word I got back was he had no issues with that. So those were the only changes. So any characterization that this was not the original agreement, it's not in terms of the technical changes that were there, but that's all.
Well, and I'm looking at attachment F in our packet that is the same document passed out by Mr. Ewan with some cross-outs that you just mentioned.
Yes.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
If I can add, Chief, there's also additional language that has been inserted at the top. And in response to Mr. Overholden, respectfully, and the representation he makes is absolutely correct. I did get a phone call on Wednesday morning, and I did call Mr. Overholt's secretary back and stated to her that I was fine with those technical changes. I did not know about the sentence going at the top of this.
Are you referring to the sentence that says AOC and court agree that AOC will present the following to the Judicial Council for its consideration?
That is correct.
That's the one that you didn't know about?
That's the one I did not know about. But furthermore, I think that Mr. Overholt was doing the right thing and having lines here for initials. I think what you will see, though, is my initials are missing, and that's because, unfortunately, I was never presented this particular document until I saw it in the posting to the meeting agenda.
Thank you. Judge Kaufman.
I have a lot of questions, but I just want to make one simple question first, and I'll come back later. I've read your press release. That's your press release, isn't it?
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
That is.
In the second paragraph, correct me if I'm wrong, nobody changed this one. And is the agreement, which was struck after negotiations that began late last week and continued over the weekend, must be approved by the Judicial Council in a special meeting on September 9th, 2011. So when you made this agreement, you knew that the Judicial Council had to approve it. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I'm not disputing that, Judge Kaufman. What I'm disputing
is... You said that before, that you bargained in good faith and you thought you had an agreement, but you knew this agreement had to be approved by the judicial council, did it not?
That, you're absolutely correct. What I'm saying, Judge Kaufman, if you'll allow me, is the agreement is that the options before you are not ratification of the agreement, but rather ratification of one point of the agreement.
Judge Rosenberg, and then Justice Miller.
Yeah. As you know, I'm the incoming chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee. I think what Mr. Ewan is concerned about, correct me if I'm wrong, are the seven requirements that are included. It's not so much the technical word here, word there in the agreement, but the seven requirements that are listed as part of option one. Let me just say a couple things. First of all, I do support San Francisco's ability to obtain the funds that were negotiated between the AOC and San Francisco. And frankly, I recommend that the council approve the agreement without the necessity of the requirements that are laid out on pages 2 through 4. I think the agreement says what the money will be used for, and that should be sufficient without the other requirements, which apparently were not discussed between San Francisco and the AOC. I would only raise a word of caution and realism. There are only $9.8 million in the urgent needs reserve, and I expect that that amount will be about the same next year and then the year thereafter. So we're not talking about a lot of money. There are 58 trial courts, and I suspect that many of them are in the position or will be soon in the position of layoffs, mandatory furloughs, reduced hours, and court closures. And if the economic situation in Sacramento and California continues, I suspect 50 or more of the trial courts will be in that position by next year. So I just raise that bit of reality.
Justice Miller?
Well, I guess I'm just somewhat confused, because I thought that when you handed out this document that it was going to indicate something significantly untoward had occurred, and I thought that's what you were trying to say, and now it sounds like in some regards you're not. I tried to stress as much as I could that these were not recommendations. Staff didn't prepare it. They were not recommendations. They were just discussion points so that we could have the opportunity to consider all of the aspects of this agreement. As the judge just indicated, this is a significant percent of this particular fund. We have to manage the entire fund. We already have other courts coming to us that are asking for money. And we don't even have the criteria yet. I felt like by setting this meeting now, rather than telling you, come back in October, at the end of October, that we were in essence doing you a favor. And quite frankly, I don't appreciate the lecture that we received, because I think we're here and have been here trying to help you, trying to provide a way to make sure that you keep your courts open. There are many, many discussions that all of us have had on the different options available to us since we decided to put this meeting on at such quick notice. And to be accused of, in essence, trying to go back on the deal, it had nothing to do with that. We wanted to make sure you got the money. We wanted to make sure you kept your courts open. We want to make sure that there's money for everyone else in the state to do the same thing. And to make it sound like you have, that somehow we're committing a crime or we're doing something that is evil, I find offensive. I mean, we're only here to help. That's all we're here for. And again, all of us have been talking for days and days about this to try to come up with a way to make sure that there's money for you and all of the other courts. And I don't blame you for not wanting to be micromanaged. I don't want to be micromanaged either. But they were options. They were discussion points. They were things that we wanted to make sure that we considered, so that when we send this message out to all the other courts, they know what the ground rules were. I didn't particularly want to set this meeting this early, because I felt like we needed criteria. We're judges. We need to make fair decisions. We need to make decisions based on precedents, and we don't have that. but there was an urgent need. You asked for it to be done this quickly, and we accommodated you. And I think you should have come here and said, let's figure something out. Let's try to work this out. But in essence, you've thrown it on us, and you've made us defensive. So I want to work this out. I almost feel like we shouldn't have any more discussion about some of the things that you said. Let's figure it out, because we want to keep your courts open. I stood out in the hallway with two attorneys that I respect. They just want to go to work and take their clients to your courts. All we want to do is make sure that there's family law, juvenile, all those people. You had this one clerk talk about family law. I understand that. I was in the trial court for 11 years. I saw what goes on there. It is so important for those people, because most of them don't have attorneys. We just want to make sure they have a place to go. So I apologize. I got exercise, but you got exercise too. And I think that's what we're here for. And I think we need to put behind us all of the comments that have been made by others about these concerns in the branch that we're not trying to do that, and that people want to tear the Judicial Council down. We're here to help. Please, please let us do that without all of the acrimony that you talked about. The council wants to do this. They want to figure it out, but they've got to do it in a way that's protective of the entire branch. I
appreciate that, Justice Miller. Frankly speaking, that's music to my ears, and unfortunately, I did not hear that until just now. Perhaps if I had heard that earlier, that these options, and perhaps if I had received an advance copy of this before it was publicized publicly, perhaps something could have been worked out. I think it's unfortunate that that dialogue did not occur.
And I think that's a lesson that we need to take. The council has really been trying in the past few months. You've heard it. We've had public meetings. We have public comment. We're talking about incredible changes to how we're going to govern ourselves and to do it in a better way. I take that as a lesson, that we should have been more communicative and we should have talked more. And that's a legitimate concern I have, and it's a legitimate concern that you have, and maybe we should have just both picked up the phone. We've been working every day for hours trying to get this all together, and I apologize if the report didn't say clearly it was options. I thought it did, and that's why in my opening remarks, I wasn't going to talk in the opening, but I wanted to make clear these were options. Nobody recommended this. No, staff didn't tell us what to put in there. So we left something out about the 650, I apologize. I think we just thought that was assumed that you would keep the complex courts open and we'd provide that.
And I appreciate that. I do, as I stated earlier, I do thank you for the work that you have done. I understand that this was done very quickly, and that you had to jump through a lot of hoops to get this meeting set, and not only this meeting, but your prior ENP meetings as well. I really appreciate that, because our layoffs happen on October 3rd. So I appreciate you doing that here. I think we share a common goal, and the common goal is not only making sure that the attorneys in San Francisco are employed, but I would hope that your common goal that you share with me is to make sure that as many of the 177 employees that have received pink slips at the San Francisco Superior Court remain employed as well.
I appreciate your clerks coming here. I mean, to me, that's pretty scary to come before the Judicial Council in this particular setting and speak. But I appreciate that they come, because that's the real-world aspect. It's the people that work at the courts down in the first level, and it's the pro-pers that are coming. So I would just like to put all that other stuff behind us and just work together to come up with something that we can all agree on.
Judge So?
No one wants to micromanage the San Francisco Superior Court. As the former presiding judge of San Diego, I wouldn't want anybody micromanaging my court. But at the same time, I think the council has an obligation, if it's going to allocate this money, to know what it's going to be used for. So, for example, if this $2.5 million roughly is allocated to the San Francisco court, are juvenile courts going to remain open? Are family courts going to remain open? Are civil courts going to remain open? I understand with the budget difficulties, service may be diminished. But I think our concern is that there's a place for these people to go, and we'll limp along until the budget changes.
So I think what's going on here is there's a communication issue, and that this is perhaps why I was under the impression that you had not seen the report, the agreement. I thought we had made it pretty clear in the agreement and that I signed that 11 courtrooms will remain open.
But what are they going to do? I mean, I understand 11 courtrooms are going to remain open from that agreement, but what are they going to do? Are you still going to have a juvenile calendar? Are you going to have a family calendar? Are you going to have a small claims calendar? Can you tell us what it is that this $2.5 million is going to be used for?
So what we're going to have is we're specifically the 11 courtrooms that will remain open are civil courtrooms. Let me clarify, though, I don't want there to be any impression that we were eliminating juvenile, family, or small claims calendars. We absolutely were not. Were we downsizing them and consolidating some? Absolutely. But the calendars still existed. We did not outright eliminate juvenile dependency. We did not outright eliminate juvenile delinquency. We did not outright eliminate small claims. We understand our constitutional obligations, and we're keeping those courtrooms open. And it was always our intent, even with downsizing, to keep those types of courtrooms open.
So let me see if I understand what your plan was. Your plan was to grow your fund balance. Absent any further allocation, your plan was to grow your fund balance and close your civil courtrooms.
No, and I think that's where the communications hurdle is at the highest. I don't know why it is that there is an impression that the San Francisco Superior Court is trying to grow our fund balance. What we're doing is we're looking at a budget solution in a way that is not conventional for government, I know, but it's a way that ensures long-term sustainability of the San Francisco Superior Court. And that is, we want to make sure that what we have by the end of year three covers all of our deficits for years one, two, and three. And if you look on the report, actually, you can see that Mr. Theodorovich and Mr. Chang did an excellent job illustrating that with the three-year plans that they inserted in here. And granted that this information came from the San Francisco Superior Court in our planning, but Mr. Theodorovich and Mr. Chang clearly get it, they understand it, and they've illustrated it well in the various tables of the report.
But I thought that if you closed your civil courtrooms at the end of this fiscal year, your fund balance would grow to how much? How many? $11.85 million.
And let me tell you why we're doing that. I'm not going to pass this out, but I know you're all very familiar with this. This is the document that Stephen Nash was very good at doing, and I suspect Mr. Theodorovich is very good at doing. These are your numbers. Trial court funding reduction analysis, and it shows four fiscal years. This is what we plan on. And what we do is we look at the bottom line of cuts for the next 3 years, and we take close to 3.5% of that because that's what we are of the overall state's allocation, and that's how we get our deficit.
I understand.
And that deficit is what we use our fund balance to address.
Right.
So if we are to recklessly spend down our fund balances, not only do we not have the cash on hand to be able to make payments to vendors and employees, we don't have any solutions for the future. And we constantly, every year, are yo-yoing our staff on a layoff or no layoff mode.
Right, but it's your choice to grow. It would be your choice to grow your fund balance from $4 million to $11 million. Is that correct?
Judge, so respectfully, I will not be agreeing to anything that says we're growing our fund balance. Are we using our fund balance to get through the numbers articulated by your staff? Absolutely.
Well,
that is what we're doing.
It increases to $11 million. Am I correct?
It increases to $11 million at the end of this fiscal year. At the end of the third fiscal year, it does not.
Judge Wesley.
Well, I, for one, congratulate San Francisco on having a three-year plan. I think every court should have a three-year plan because we're all facing tough times. And we're doing the same thing in Los Angeles, so let there be no doubt that we're trying to use our fund balance as bridge financing to get to our third year. If you look at the plan in our materials, they end up with no fund balance, practically $1.88 million in 13-14 with 192 staff layoff. That's if they can get that far. So I congratulate you on having a plan. Let me just say this. I think that Judge Rosenberg raised a good point, and that is that this emergency funding is very small. There's just not a lot of money there. The truth is that this judicial council placed San Francisco and other courts like San Francisco in the position they are in today. The legislature gave this council the authority when we were cut the extra $150 million to fill that entire amount from any source. I raised it at the council. They could have found $82 million that were still left on the table. That money still exists in construction funds and CCMS. If that money had been distributed, courts wouldn't have to come begging to the Judicial Council for additional money to keep their courts open. The Chief Deputy Director signed an agreement with the CEO and Presiding Judge of San Francisco. In that agreement, I believe he had the authority of the Chief Justice, or he wouldn't have been negotiating. That agreement did not require Judicial Council oversight and contain none of the conditions contained in the options, which are options, as Justice Miller said. Therefore, I move to approve the original agreement the way it was offered, with no conditions added, to honor the offer made and accepted in good faith by the San Francisco presiding judge and the CEO on behalf of the Chief Justice and the Chief Deputy Director, and that the money be delivered no later than September 30th of this year to avoid additional layoffs. That's my motion.
Well, let's be clear. Before the Judicial Council meeting, after many meetings between San Francisco and the AOC, I mentioned to the AOC, through Ron and Bill, that since we hadn't heard of a concrete solution, that they should put together, based on all of their meetings, some kind of solution here. And that was done. I also indicated this is not a negotiation. This is a solution, a way that we can meet of the minds to find a way to get through this year. A three-year plan is ideal, no doubt. Realistic, not in this fiscal environment. And every day that I go to the legislature, and Kurt goes to the legislature, and Bill and Ron go to the legislature. So the offer or the solution was to find something we can do for this year. And it was based on accumulation of the meetings that had been occurring between the AOC and San Francisco that for some reason was reported in the paper because the AOC appeared to be doing nothing. That was the report in the paper. AOC was responding to nothing and doing nothing, when in fact that was inaccurate. So before the Judicial Council meeting, something was put together. During the Thursday of the business meeting, there were discussions and meetings back and forth, but no inked arrangement or agreement. But at all times, it was understood, because of this situation that we're in, that this would be something that had to be approved by Judicial Council. Because the AOC, unlike the fiction out there, does not run council. AOC does not bind council. AOC doesn't make the decisions and then council ratifies. This is a prime example of that truism in effect. And that is that the AOC, because that is their job to try to help and talk with the courts, because we certainly couldn't do it in any expeditious fashion as a branch or as a council, Ron did that to make those negotiations and to talk that through. And there were many discussions resulting in this. Was this what everyone envisioned? I doubt it. Was it supposed to be an executed agreement? No. Could it have been? I hardly see how that could be with Judicial Council having to approve this. And the basis for that approval is, in my view, this improvement money belongs to all 58 courts. And all courts have done the best they can under the harshest of circumstances to operationalize cuts. But because of the state economy, because of the cuts and the lack of restoration, everyone is struggling. And this money belongs to all courts. And we have to think about planning. And we have to think about what other courts will need. People say it's not a lot of money. But if you talk to the small counties, it's a great deal of money. It's a great deal that could solve their problems. So this money is handled in such a way with council review because it is emergency money for all courts. And we're only beginning to see the requests being made. I've had meetings. I was in San Joaquin yesterday, received another communication from another court. This is just the beginning. This money has to be something that council takes control of. It was Edith Mathai who said council should be taking control of this. And we are, as we have been on other issues. It is not an AOC position to seal this deal. So just so for clarification, I give you that background. And I tell you, the kind of time that has been devoted to this and the communication that's been devoted to this would astound all of you how much time this has occupied. My desk, Bill's desk, Ron's desk, Chad's desk, Susan's desk, Mary's desk. It has taken a considerable amount of time and effort. And bringing you together for this meeting, also considerable time and effort, which I appreciate everyone being here. There's a lot of water under the bridge. We have options to think about. We may or may not adopt them all, but it's certainly something that we as a responsible council have an obligation with this public money to consider. We may reject it all, but as council, I don't know, have you tried to get a loan from a bank lately? Do you know what a loan takes? Now, a $2.5 million augmentation of urgent funds should take a little bit more than a rubber stamp. Judge O'Malley.
Well, excuse me. I'm going to second the motion, but I may have some amendments when I have a turn to ask some questions. But for the, so it's on
and
the
I'd
table.
I'd like to make a substitute motion additions too.
Well, okay. If I said I'm seconding it, but I may want to make some amendments when it's my turn to have some questions.
Well, I'm going to first call on Judge O'Malley. I have that in mind, Judge Pine, so we'll see the second, but I'm calling on Judge O'Malley.
That's fine. I just wanted, for the record, that for there to be a second so the motion's on the table. Is that the right parliamentary language? That's right.
When you take your turn, Bert. All right. So I disagree a little bit with my colleague, Judge Wesley, in that the legislature has warned us time and time again to make operational changes to the way that the courts do business and not to rely on one-time solution funds from the AOC. We have heard this since 2008 when these permanent cuts began. This problem is not the AOC's problem. It's not the Judicial Council's problem. Each court heard the same message. I attended the same meetings, the San Francisco PJ and CEO, and that message was clear. I'm a bit distressed that we're being placed in this position, and I'm at a loss as to how San Francisco has come to this dire position. And I am wondering what they've been doing since 2008 until 2010 when they came up with their plan to lay off 122 people. Our courts and the PJs have been working on operationalization, the cuts, since 2008. And again, I attended those meetings, the regional meetings, where we were discussing the budget with Ron, with Kurt, with Bill, with the chief, and it was made clear. The PJs and the executive committee meetings made clear we need to address these cuts as permanent cuts. I, along with all the other PJs in the state, made some very tough decisions over the last 3.5 years. Many of us had to lay off employees to keep our courts operating within the means budgeted to us by the legislature. Did we want to do that? Absolutely not. My court is down 25%, and the last I saw, San Francisco was still at 100% of their staff level. I would have loved to have sit back and have done nothing, waiting and expecting that I would get a bailout in the end. But I, along with most other PJs, did not do that. It would have been irresponsible to do so. And the demands that I have been listening to from San Francisco and the press releases and the TV time, you know, it's been rather caustic and at times just downright nasty. And people have been working very, very hard to try and come up with a solution. And frankly, the attitude and the rhetoric that I've been hearing on the TV and across the news has not been helpful in helping the situation. And to lay blame on the AOC because at one point last year when San Francisco came up with a plan in 2010, I guess, that the council or the AOC had asked them to forestall the layoffs for a while so that they could negotiate on behalf of the branch. And until that was completed, and to lay blame on the AOC for now their problems, I think is absolutely laying blame where it does not belong. In looking at the press release, you know, I see that Judge Feinstein emphasized that a significant part of the agreement would require a commitment from the AOC to advocate to revenue solutions, including restoration of judicial branch funding. I'm sorry, but I just want to know what planet you were on. For the last 3 years, since 2008, since we have been receiving these cuts, people have been working tirelessly, going up to the legislature, meeting with the legislators. The PJ's group has, the CIAC has, Chief Justice George did it, our current Chief Justice is doing it, Ron and Bill and Kurt have been living at the Capitol asking for a restoration of funds. And frankly, to say that we need this commitment, it's insulting. It's absolutely insulting. People have been working very hard to get these funds restored. And if I could have had half of the airtime that San Francisco used to lay blame on others just to be publicizing to the public the needs of the branch as opposed to their own court, we might be in a different place right now. I challenge the leadership of San Francisco to help the cause, to join in the fight for funds for all the courts and not just their own. This is a bailout, plain and simple. And for a court who somehow thought that these permanent cuts would magically disappear, it's hard to swallow. It's not fair to all the other courts who've made the tough but responsible choices in dealing with these devastating cuts imposed by the legislature. And again, I'm distressed because the citizens of San Francisco frankly deserve better. And I don't want to punish them for the shortcomings of their court's mismanaged decisions, or non-decisions as it were. Honestly, the court doesn't really meet the criteria under the definition of urgent needs that we have right now. However, this council must look to the effect of this court and what it's done to its citizens to be able to provide justice to those citizens. We have to look to the bigger picture, as uncomfortable as it is for me and as distressed as I am about being put in this situation. And I'm sorry, but you are a mismanaged organization when you exhaust 8 million of your reserves down to 280,000 without really a game plan. So I think that we have to be very, very careful in making sure, because I'd love for my court to line up. $2.5 million would have prevented many, many layoffs that I had to cope with and to do when I was a presiding judge. So I think that this body and this council has to be very careful in the criteria so that it is fair. And I'm just very distressed and really by the presentation today as to demanding these funds when really the situation here, nobody should be demanding anything.
Justice Miller, Justice Kaufman, or Judge Kaufman, and Kim Turner.
I wanted to see if I can make an amendment to your motion. Can I state it and see whether you would accept it?
Yeah, please state it first.
I don't know what the parliamentary rules are on that. We don't have those yet. But
The maker of the motion can accept a friendly amendment, but if he doesn't, you can make an amendment.
So let me state it, okay, and then maybe we have further discussion after that. So I'd like to propose that an amendment to your motion be that we approve the first five bullet points of the agreement. I don't know if the $650,000 needs to be included or not, because if you keep your courts open, you get it. But I don't have a problem putting it in there.
Is it actually $645,900?
Well, whatever it may be, the actual amount.
Isn't that what was agreed to?
$650,000 was the original amount, and $645,000 hidden here was the actual amount that the court's been receiving for that. And I would say I'm not arguing against that money, but that's part of the mod fund allocation, not part of an urgent need allocation. So just so you know what you're doing.
Can I ask a question?
Question by Judge Waters.
Didn't we already approve the allocations for complex litigation back in our July meeting?
Yes. You approved.
So it doesn't need to be part of this proposal.
Yeah.
They just have to take
it. It's in there, so I don't have a problem keeping it.
This is only in there because the court was going to refuse the money if they had to close their complex court. So this is the money they've been receiving that they will continue to receive.
All right. Can I clarify also that Mr. Overholt and I had this exact discussion when we were talking about this, and I made it clear to him, well, I don't know why you're including this in there if we've been receiving this all along and every year you offer this to us and we haven't done so yet. So I see exactly where you're coming from, and I'm fine with that. That was frankly the statement I was making all along to Mr. Overholt, is it's unnecessary in here, but if he wants to put it in here, then frankly it should be in the report as well.
All right. So just to avoid any confusion, I don't have a problem. My motion or amendment would be to add the first five bullet points.
A little change on that one where it could be where
we're talking about the bullet points.
Well, I'm going to get to that. If you look at the option number one on page number two, I do think there needs to be some statement, and maybe we can work on that particular language, that we're providing this money to the court and they're going to keep the courts open so that they can provide the services. I think you already committed to that. You're not closing juvenile, family law, small claims. I think it's important that you also have the authority under 3C to have the discretion to spend down your fund balance below what's required. I mean, if you have significant needs and you have that need, then I think we should provide that to you. That was one of the options. I do think option number five is important, that there be some type of a report back at the end of the year with regards to the use of that money. I just think that that's important for the record keeping of that. And then with regards to the last bullet point on the agreement, I would like to I'd like to change it from Administrative Office of the Courts to Judicial Council commits to advocate for revenue solutions, including but not limited to budget restorations, review of uniform statewide fees, period. That's all that it would be. It wouldn't include the additional amount because we've already dealt with that.
Can I say, I don't consider that a friendly amendment. I'd like my motion to stand as it was. Frankly, that really changes my motion. My motion was no conditions at all. Accept it as it was.
Can I make a substitute motion now, or how does that work?
Yes, you may.
So I'd like to make a substitute motion of those items which I indicated. Oh, shoot. Sure, okay, I can repeat them. If you look at the agreement, it is the first five bullet points with the amount for complex.
Which agreement is it? Is it the attachment F?
Yes.
Because it sounds to me like attachment F was the actual final understanding.
Yes, it would be. So if we look at attachment F, it would be the first five bullet points. Mm-hmm. Then the last bullet point would read, Judicial Council and AOC commit to advocate for revenue solutions, including but not limited to budget restorations, review of uniform statewide fees, and the Superior Court of San Francisco, that we will all work together in that regards. I don't even know that needs to be a part of it, but I think we should include it just because it's in the agreement. Then that you would find my notes. You would add the language in option number one, which states the purpose of the $2.5 million allocation. You would number 3C, which gives them discretion to...
number one, it would not be this exact language.
We can work on that language.
We talked about functions rather than this other language.
Yes, that's fine. Okay. That's fine. And then 3C, which is they have the authority to spend down their fund balance. And then number five, that they provide a report at June 30th, 2012. That's my motion. Option number one. What I'm trying to add is to make sure that, based on what was said here today, that we have an agreement that they're going to utilize this money to keep their courts open, to provide
all of the services that a court provides, family law, juvenile, small claims, probate, traffic, and they've already committed to that. And I think we had a second.
We had a second from Judge Waters, but I'd like to hear from... I realize there are two competing motions. I'd like to hear from Judge Kaufman.
Two things. One is directed to Justice Miller, is that your motion says we give San Francisco $2.5 million. And I really don't have a problem with that, okay? I mean, I think we should do that. However, it's with no strings attached. And the question is, and I wanted to direct it to Mr. Ewan, is that what concerns me is that I was on the A&E committee. We saw the May 2010 audit of San Francisco. That was very disturbing. And it echoes what Judge O'Malley said. This was a court in distress. And Mr. Ewan, to your credit, you've done a great job putting the court back on its feet. But still, this court had problems. And it's only been 6 months or a year or less that you've been able to correct these things. I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about giving you more money based on the past 5 or 6 years of your history, and number one. Number two is I would give San Francisco the $2.5 million plus the complex litigation, but there has to be a repayment plan, and it has, this is not about San Francisco, okay? This is about the fund, and this is about the precedent setting, and this is about the other courts that are standing in the background waiting to see what we do. Because if we give them $2.5 million, you're going to get 57 other requests for more money, okay? And we have to say we're going to help courts that need it, but there has to be a loan when it's appropriate. If we give them that money, there has to be a loan payment. And quite honestly, I'm not really concerned about what that is, whether we have a three-year delay and they pay it over 10 years. I don't really care. It's just that it can't be a gift. It has to be a loan. Without that proviso, I have a big problem.
Kim Turner.
Thank you, Chief. As the chair of the Court Executive Advisory Committee, I have learned from my colleagues that there are at least five and possibly more other courts that are in that may be this year in a similar position to the one that San Francisco is in now. We know that San Joaquin is waiting in the wings. They will probably come before the before council in October. There are other small courts, I know, in the northern central region. There are other courts possibly in Bankro that will have similar problems. And I am deeply concerned about what we will say to those courts if we deplete all of the available $9.8 million on one or two high-profile requests this early in the year. So I think the council has a duty to develop, approve, publicize, and allow time for other courts to submit deficiency requests. We need to look at the criteria. We need to satisfy ourselves that we have updated and modernized the criteria because, as we have all acknowledged, the criteria that exists today is wholly insufficient for the challenges that face California courts. It was developed 10 years ago. Every court that I know of would meet that criteria today and should be lining up for their deficiency funding. So I have a great concern that the council today would be acting prematurely to do what is before the council. $2.5 million today means more than 25% of the available funding would be gone. Furthermore, I think that certainly the employees in San Francisco, the lawyers, the litigants, the public in San Francisco will be very disadvantaged by reductions in San Francisco, but all of our courts have been disadvantaged by reductions in other jurisdictions. And to the extent that we as a council must do the hard work, do the heavy lifting, accountability, fair and equal application of a set of criteria, of guidelines to drive the decision-making, I think that it would be premature of us to take such action today. I believe that San Francisco has nearly $5 million in a fund balance, and I would respectfully request that the council consider asking San Francisco to continue to draw down its fund balance while we do the analysis, while we get that working group together to look at the criteria, while we come back before council in October and bring to the council an updated version of what those guidelines will be so that we can, in fact, evaluate all requests. we can evaluate all requests from all courts that will be in similar positions. So I understand there's a lot of sensitivity about this, that San Francisco has a plan that's already somewhat downstream, but San Francisco has some money right now to continue to forestall decisions that don't need to be made today or September 30th or October 3rd while we actually do the preparatory work to, you know, to, I think, act as a responsible counsel in this regard.
Chief, can I click?
Well, Miriam has had her hand up first.
And so has Edith Mufai.
Thank you. Miriam, Edith, Bert, who keeps signaling me out of my peripheral vision. And my
I thought you forgot me.
Judge Jackson. I think we are where we are, and my aim as we sit here today is to look forward, not backward. Mm-hmm. I think we have to act responsibly. I think we have to act with the full interest of all of the courts and the citizens that are served throughout the state in mind. But it also is clear to me that with those interests in mind, it would be untenable to not try to do something to assist San Francisco. And I'm not hearing really disagreement between what Justice Miller is saying in that regard, what Judge Wesley is saying, what others have said. I'd prefer us to not recriminate at this point. And this has been a troubling meeting to hear the degree of recrimination. I think there's a lot that has been happening of late to try to look forward, not backward, to try to have everyone work together on behalf of an entire state and an entire group of citizens who need the services so desperately that the court provides. I also feel some moral obligation given the fact that basic terms of an agreement were reached. I recognize and San Francisco acknowledged in its press release that those were to come to the council, but certainly there's a lot to be learned from the process here that I would hope won't repeat itself given the lessons that we've learned. I guess what I'd like to do with all of that in mind, Mr. Yoon, is ask you a question. Justice Miller has proposed a few slight modifications. I recognize that the process was imperfect. You should have seen the memo. I would have preferred it for our dialogue for you to have seen it, responded in writing. I think any good appellate judge or justice prefers to see, you know, the issues meet and have a full discussion. But given, again, where we are in an effort to work with you to try to move forward, but to try to do so responsibly, I'm only hearing a few modifications. He's looking to remove a clause from the last bullet, and I understand that that's a clause that you all would prefer there. I also understand, given PCLC's discussion that we heard about from Justice Baxter, that that's not consistent with where PCLC came out. I'd rather not have us today have to decide, do we agree with you, do we agree with PCLC, because I don't want to have that background noise waylay this. So he's asking to have that removed. He's asking for an annual report. And then as I understand it, he's asking for a slight modification to that second to the last bullet. Those seem modest to me. They seem consistent with what you've said. So I'd like to ask you, are you comfortable with that? Because if you're comfortable with that, I find this to be, and I realize that you're being put in a position of being asked to speak on behalf of your court leadership, but are you comfortable and do you presume that your court leadership would be comfortable with that?
So it's something that certainly is a step in the right direction. It's something that I will have to discuss with Judge Feinstein as presiding judge. She apologizes for not being here today. She has she's sick, basically. We can have that discussion and we can get back to the council.
Well, let me phrase the question a little bit differently. Given how modest those changes are, what in it do you think potentially might trouble your presiding judge? I mean, I hear very small differences. So, again, I understand she's not here. You're having to speak for her. I'd like to have, you know, a little bit of an understanding if there's anything in it, because obviously she saw the options before walking in, you're walking in today, and I'm sure must have guided you in what was troubling with those options. And I found option 7 troubling as well because it gave you all an incentive to spend down your reserves. And I don't think that's in the interest of the branch, sort of use or lose kind of incentive. So I know you came in here with an understanding of what in those options troubled her. So given what you've heard from Justice Miller, is there anything in it based on your discussion up until...
On your button.
Well, I'm certainly very happy to hear that someone on the council understands that condition 7 is actually a disincentive to trial court management, which is something that I've been saying for the last 40 hours or so, however long I've actually seen this report. I can tell you that this, and this is probably the most clear thing that my presiding judge has said to me about the conditions and option 1 before you, is that if all conditions under option 1 were lifted and the bullets of the agreement itself were inserted, then she would have no issue. Frankly, I don't know if there's any room for movement, but it's certainly something that I can talk to her further about.
Edith.
I've been very troubled by this entire process because of the fact that each of the courts of our state are facing terrible problems over the next 3 years, not just San Francisco. And I think that it's our responsibility to evaluate the real situation in those courts and make responsible decisions as to where those limited funds are best spent on a basis other than which of the courts is making the loudest noise and which of the courts is threatening to close the most doors. Without taking a really good look at what really needs to be happening as far as court closures or not. I was very troubled because starting out of curiosity and then with fascination, I spent some time doing some math on the table that is on page 9 of the report that we got. And if you look on that table that it's at the top of the page, and you look at average budgeted compensation per filled position, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's the fifth line down, between fiscal year 2010 to 2011 and fiscal year 2011-2012, on the amount per budgeted position, it goes up significantly. And if you multiply that number by the 493 filled positions proposed for 11-12, that alone is a $4 million increase. If you look at the average budgeted compensation per filled position, the comparison between 07-08 and 11-12, that's been a $12 million plus increase. If you look at the comparison, and I know that there are reasons why there are higher budgeted amounts per filled position in San Francisco as opposed to many other places in the state, but there are breathtaking differences here when you look at the statewide average compensation per filled position at $97,659. And I'm now looking at 11-12 fiscal year, and you look at $137,469 in San Francisco. Again, taking that differential and multiplying it out over 493 positions, that comes up to approximately $19 million. It's $19,626,330. Now, there may be a lot of explanations for all of this that I don't know that are completely legitimate and completely understandable. There may be, I obviously wasn't involved in how this all came up and how it was created, but as a member of a body that is being asked to make an emergency allocation because of a crisis in a court that has to close its doors, I'd like to know what efforts have been made to address that discrepancy and those areas, or whether there's an explanation that I simply don't know. That, because obviously if you didn't have those differentials, the numbers we would be talking about are not the numbers we're now talking about.
Let me ask. I was going to ask Bert and then Terry.
Sure, you wanted to address that. I did want to make some statements, but if you can address that, I'll yield part of my time.
Thank you. So I have a piece of news, but let me correct some information and also respond to various questions that have come that I have not been able to respond to yet. Let me first clarify, Judge O'Malley, I do want to point out the same table that Ms. Mathai has pointed to that you can see since over the last 4 years, in fact, we have reduced some of our positions. It looks like 100% if you look at 11-12, but that's because I implemented a policy that we eliminate vacancies and we don't keep them as authorized positions. If there's a vacancy, it's gone. And if you as a manager or administrator want it back in the future sometime, you better darn well make a good justification to me. So you can see compared to 08-09, which was our peak, we had 591 authorized positions. We only have 493 filled positions now, so almost 100. Just a clarification. In response to statements about us being mismanaged, if it is a result of seeing the audit, let me ask you what in the audit leads you to think we're mismanaged. If it's the fact that the court was providing services for the county, let me also refer you to the page that Mr. Judnick very graciously included in the audit that it was I who pointed that out to his team. His team didn't find it. As an institution, the court may have done things that we should not have done previously, and I don't have any regrets. I take full responsibility for that. I have only been on here on the job for about a year, so Judge Kaufman, thank you for making sure that was known. And as I stated in June, I am correcting those problems. So mismanaged, no. Vacancies, yes. We are doing things. And the letter that Judge Feinstein sent you a couple of weeks ago, which started this request, will lay out in bulleted form all the things that we have done. I do also want to state that in response to Ms. Turner, your point on our $5 billion reserves, the only thing I can say, and you should know this full well also, is money on paper is not the same as money in cash. So, yes, we have almost $5 million in our reserve. Unfortunately, I believe $300,000 to $400,000 of that is restricted, so it's special funds. And almost half of the remaining balance are receivables. It's not cash yet, which leaves us with slightly over $2.5 million. Well, guess how much we need in our local treasury, as I illustrated earlier, to make payroll to staff? $2.5 million. So that's a revolving fund that, unfortunately, if we bring down to zero, that means I don't have any money to pay my staff, and my staff deserve better. Finally, Ms. Mathai, thank you for raising these issues. I do want to articulate a couple of things. Number one, yes, you're absolutely right that the cost per budgeted position has gone up at my court, but you'll see that most of that increase is in the filled position for benefits line. And a budget is always two sides of the picture, right? The expenditure sides and the revenue side. And this is obviously the expenditure side. On the revenue side, you have to know, and staff will definitely know this, is that there has been pass-through funding to cover the cost of benefits. And frankly, these are also uncontrollable costs to us. This is mostly retirement. Our retirement costs went up 18% from last year to this year. And one of the things which will tell you perhaps San Francisco was not mismanaged was before pension reform was the sexy thing to do 6 years ago, San Francisco already did it. The court doesn't pay any of the employee contribution to it. The employee pays all of it. In the past, and at most public entities right now, the employer, so whatever government agency employs them, picks up the first 6 to 8%. We don't pick up any of the percent. The entire employee contribution is borne by them. So we've done that already, but still our retirement costs have escalated, and that's the main driver in that issue. I do want to say also, and this is in Ms. Krinsky, your question, as a benefit of luxury or technology that we have now, Judge Feinstein has emailed, so she's listening in on her sick bed. Thank you, Judge. Is okay with the changes that have been proposed.
Okay. So I think Judge Pine wanted it all this time.
Judge Pine.
Yeah, Mr. Yoon, I don't know if you've been listening to the last council meetings or not, but I've been a supporter of San Francisco's needs here, and I've been in your corner. And yet I was very troubled by your opening remarks. I think it's clear that this was not all a charade. I think it's also clear that the agreement that was presented to us by Mr. Overholt was not outrageous. This was no, it was no type of a fraud. It really represented the final agreement of the parties. And I am troubled by your comment when you say that there's an integrity in your signature, and the implication is perhaps that there wasn't in Mr. Overholt's. And I want to defend him and really say that those kind of comments were just out of line. And it caused a very negative reaction on my part in the way you've presented things. I've calmed down because, in the end, I support this effort. And I recognize, as other council members have said, that there are many reasons why we could say no. This is premature. It's being forced on us. There's lots of things to blame San Francisco for in the way they've handled things. Some of their public remarks have not been productive or constructive. But in the end, I think we have a responsibility to the public in San Francisco and the legal community in San Francisco to avoid the closure of all these courts. So I urge the council members to support this initiative. In my view, motion, in my view, it doesn't constitute a precedent for other matters that come before us. We are going to be addressing criteria as needed, and hopefully we'll have a better process. But we're faced with this decision now, and I don't think we can just walk out of here, as I once said beforehand, and allow all these courts in San Francisco to close.
Judge Jackson.
Yes, I have to, apologize maybe to you, Mr. Ewan, because I thought I was clear when I would come back and talk to you. And to hear today that you were confused and you didn't understand where the council was coming from, maybe I was not as clear, because I do want to stress, not only am I a council member, but I'm also a person who is impacted, because I am a Superior Court judge in the County of San Francisco. What I'd like to say to all of you is that we do have to move forward. We do have to stop the finger pointing. We're not just San Francisco court. We're not just a court that gets the media. We are one court. And I remember something that the chief said back in February when we were in Sacramento. We're in a new norm. It is not business as usual. It's not the same way. So how we go and get fees and get adequate funding, we're going to have to be very creative. But that's not what's on the table now. What's on the table is one of our courts, or one of our branches of this great court, is in trouble. I wish we had the opportunity to study it, and we probably, if we could, have different options. And maybe these options will be interpreted as recommendations, but they're options for a well-developed plan for this type of situation we're in. But we don't have that option to wait. And we're going to have to deal with it on a case-by-case basis. And I do appreciate everybody here in this room, because they have taken time out of their busy schedules. And so San Francisco, it's not that we were trying to play a game, because too often I spoke to many of you in the evenings and late hours trying to come up with a solution, to the point I think that even Judge Pines won't sit next to me because I'm poking him in the side saying, calm down, we're all right. Because we're going to look beyond the personalities. This is not the Superior Court of Judge Feinstein. It's the Superior Court of California that happens to be in the County of San Francisco. So the 2.5, it is a fund that has been agreed to. I'm not a voting member. And even if I had been a voting member, I couldn't. I would have to recuse myself. But I strongly ask that you support this.
First, Justice Hull, and then Jim Penrod, then Judge Wessel.
Thank you, Chief. I must say that one of the things that I found disturbing in this process is that San Francisco Superior Court seems to want to treat this as a negotiation. It's not. Mm-hmm. They want to treat it like it's a settlement conference, and it's not. You're coming to the council for badly needed money. And if you get that money, then we have the right, we have the responsibility to make sure that the money is spent the way it's intended to be spent. And I must say that I came here this morning reluctantly, agreeing that we need to, because of the needs of the citizens of San Francisco, we need to give, to allocate this money. But we have obligations to the citizens in the entire state. And so that's why this is such a difficult decision for me. But I will add that to the extent I support the $2.5 million allocation, I don't want to be equivocal. I will support the $2.5 million allocation, but only with some significant oversight on this money. I'm not suggesting that the only way I'll vote in favor is to have all seven of these items, but it would be irresponsible of us to allocate this money and, frankly, to say, report back to what you, to us for what you did with it. Now, I'm not going to we've got two motions on the floor. I'm not going to add to those. I assume there will be time, but we have to get to these items. And I suggest to you that there's, that in my view, there has to be this type of oversight in fairness to all of the courts in the state, and also to set the precedent that if we're going to spend these monies as other courts come before us, we have a right to make sure that they're wisely spent.
Jim Penrod.
Wesley. In order to avoid some confusion, I would accept Justice Miller's friendly amendment so that there's only one motion instead of two motions on the table. Otherwise, it's too confusing otherwise. Since that's acceptable to Judge Pines, then that would be my request.
So we've morphed back into one motion.
Yes.
And I understand it's been stated as the agreement indicated on Attachment 7, with language on the last bullet to read, Administrative Judicial Council and the Administrative Office of the Courts and San Francisco commits to advocate for revenue solutions, including but not limited to budget restorations, review of uniform statewide fee amounts, period. This will include the option number one language and three, subdivision C, and number five. There's been discussion but not formal amendment as to oversight or a loan. So that's how it stands now, and I believe the second on this is Judge Waters, and I'm going to indicate Judge Pines because I heard him say you have no difficulty with those amendments as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. I think there was one other and that was that the second to the last bullet, and I think it would be helpful to try to give that language, to try to define it just so that it's clear to everyone. As I understand it, that final element is that the second to the last bullet would say something to the effect of Superior County of California, County of San Francisco, Superior Court, sorry, of California County, San Francisco, will use necessary resources to keep open 11 courtrooms previously marked for closure, to reduce number of staff layoffs, and to continue to provide all services, family, juvenile, civil, and criminal, that the court has previously been providing. I mean, some language like that.
How about if you look at option number one, and I'm sorry just to jump in, but if you take out the word constitutional, the urgent needs funding must be used for the sole purpose of keeping open a sufficient number of courtrooms and providing other necessary services during fiscal year to meet the Superior Court's obligation to adjudicate all matters, both civil and criminal, that come before the court.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Okay.
And take out the word constitutional.
So that would be a separate bullet.
That would be a separate bullet.
Well, that's included. Option number one language has been amended as part of this motion, and that's included in the motion as previously stated. So, Miriam, I'm going to delete more specific amendment.
Right.
I was
going to
call a question.
Okay, yeah. So I'm going to let me ask Judge Yu.
Yeah, before we vote, I wasn't really clear what Justice Miller meant to include in option one, since it looked like some.
No, I'm taking out one word, constitutional.
And the rest of option one is there included?
No, just number, bullet point number one.
So not number two.
No.
But you are including number three.
3C, just 3C,
and then five.
Number five.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
You said those.
Okay.
So it's, I'll repeat it again. It's the first five bullet points,
okay.
The language in the last bullet point, Judicial Council and AOC and San Francisco commits to advocate for revenue solutions, including but not limited to budget restorations,
review of uniform statewide fee amounts.
Mm-hmm.
In option one, just the bullet point number one, we take out the word constitutional. All of 3C and all of 5.
Except 3C should also take out constitutional.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Judge Stowe, and then Judge Smith.
I'm concerned about the precedent of this, that it's done without any repayment, because we know other courts are going to be coming back. I don't have a problem pushing back repayment of this, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. But otherwise, I know what will happen, and that is all these other courts are going to be in line. And we have a limited fund.
Okay. Judge Kaufman?
As I said before, is we're setting a precedent, and we have no criteria, and if we don't make it as a loan for these kind of situations, with very liberal repayment schedule, and this is not about San Francisco, that's not part of the equation, it's any court that's coming in here, because in an October meeting, you're going to get 10 different requests for the remaining amount of money and other money, and if we don't set some standard and some precedent, we're just going to... We're going to have a major problem. So, I know I'm not sure it's going to be accepted, but I would add that we need to have a repayment schedule.
Wait a minute, Judge Smith and Judge Pine.
I was going to just see what the procedural.
I just have one question, which is, we're talking about various changes to the agreement. Is this something that if we vote on it today, San Francisco is going to accept it, or is this going to be more discussion after it's a...
I think she emailed and said she was fine with my motion.
It's our action for them to accept or reject,
correct.
Period.
Right.
Okay, I just want to be clear on that, because I have some concerns about the criteria, but I'm willing to vote on it today. But I would want to know that as a council, we're making our decision, and it's an accept or reject situation. And if San Francisco doesn't feel like it can accept the conditions that we have all agreed are reasonable to impose at this point, particularly in light of the fact that we haven't gone through what I think should be a rigorous process of developing criteria going forward, then I would only want to vote in favor of it if San Francisco is going to accept it. And if they reject it, then it's up to them. But I just think that it's one of those situations where we're flying blind. And I don't like the idea of flying blind. And while I want to help San Francisco, I think that we do need to have some criteria. We do need to have accountability. It's not micromanagement. It's accountability. And I just don't feel comfortable going forward unless there's some element of that. And it's not about San Francisco. It's about the branch's future, frankly.
Thank you. So I am keeping in mind, in addition to the motion made, that there is a consideration of option for loan repayment, liberal repayment schedule, and that this is going to be an accept or reject proposition, that this, in terms of, it's not a negotiation. This particular issue shouldn't be coming back to council. I saw hands raised on here. Judge Yu and then Judge Baker.
Thanks, Chief. I'm going to use this one because the other one makes me lean on the cough button. I agree with a large measure of what was said today, and I think as judges and as the court, we have an obligation to stay above the fracas, mm-hmm. not only because that is what we need to do, but because we set an example mm-hmm. in our society as this branch. I agree with what Justice Hull said with respect to reporting back and what Justice Smith said about accountability. And I just want to ask for clarification. It sounds like if I were to vote for Justice Miller's motion, basically there's one report that we would get from San Francisco, and that is in August 1st, 2012. And I want to find a way to get the money to San Francisco as well as San Joaquin and the other courts that need it. But I can't vote for something where I'm going to get a report a year from now without any additional accountability or oversight by this council, because I feel I have an obligation to the 57 other courts in this state.
Thank you. Judge Baker?
Just a brief comment in response to Judge Smith. I would just submit that it might be appropriate for us to attach a termination date to the motion, that the motion, whatever we pass, is an agreement that would terminate after a certain number of days, and I would defer maybe to Mr. Ewan as to when that might be how long they would need to consider that, and then thereafter it would be deemed terminated.
Thank you.
Chief?
Mr. Ewing.
If I can add to kind of help drive home a solution. Well, first of all, I do say in response to accountability, and I get that, and as a public administrator or a public manager, I can appreciate the need for accountability. Let me also add, though, that every year this council makes allocation decisions in scores and sometimes to some courts hundreds of millions of dollars, and there is no accountability to that. That's moot, though. That's just my way of saying, you know, accountability for $2.5 million seems to be piddly compared to whether or not there's really accountability for the hundreds of millions of dollars being made in annual allocations. But let me say this. I think it would be fine, and I think Judge Feinstein would back me up on this, and if not, she'll send me an email. It would be fine for an annual report to be provided to the council, and I think it would also be fine for some type of repayment plan or issue or measure. The whole issue here isn't that we're here for a money grab. The whole issue here is we need funds to bridge us and keep paying vendors and employees. And if after a certain number of years we can repay that responsibly, I think that's fine.
So it's
up to me then. So can you give me some language then that I can put in this to amend it, to incorporate that? Because that seems to be a holdup for a number of the council members. The same issue I had with only having 48 hours to review the report, I would have the same issue of lack of time to consider something appropriate. But let me tell you this. I would say that it would probably be fair for repayment to happen with, let's say, no later than 4 years from now.
So how about if we make it 5 years?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So I will accept that friendly amendment.
What's the friendly amendment language?
A five-year
report.
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Okay. So we're adding to our motion by Judge Jackson. Second by Judge Kaufman. Five-year repayment.
And it
seems to me there was an oversight, maybe a request for a report in 6 months rather than a year.
Is that fine?
Yeah.
All right. I'll add that too.
And Judge Jackson and Judge Waters will second.
Can I get cupcakes once a month? No, I'm sorry.
What kind do you like?
Ron.
Shouldn't have asked that because I can tell you.
The question I have, the structure of item number 7 indicates a repayment of an amount over the minimum reserve. Is that what we're talking about?
No,
the entire amount.
No, yeah. 5-year repayment. Period.
Yeah. All right.
No interest. 5 years.
No interest.
Just a loan. No interest.
We call the question.
Yes. Are we all clear on the amendment? Because I will try to restate this for you.
Good luck.
But if everyone is relatively clear, and I think we are.
I think we are.
We are.
Then I'm going to call for the vote. All in favor of the motion as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Matter passes unanimously. Sorry,
thank you.
Yes, one thing, Bill.
Yeah, I just would, before we leave, Michael, your comments at the beginning, for me at least, were an absolute professional low in judicial administration, and the character attacks on Ron Overholt and Kurt Child were both inaccurate and uncalled for to advance passionate advocacy for the funding needs of the court. The request that Kurt made in the spring of what now is a year ago for the budget for last year to keep the powder dry while efforts were made to get the governor to restore funding and to get fees approved and other things, all of which occurred, by the way, the governor did amend the budget, added the $100 million back to restore it. The fees were authorized and approved. Ultimately, $25 million was removed by the Senate from that final deal. The council reallocated one-time money, all of which was discussed, all of which I discussed with your presiding judge at the time, the prior presiding judge. All of those obligations fully met in terms of the commitment. And it would have been nice to have had the support from the court in those efforts and the process, and that's all that Kurt requested. And for you to stand up and say that he failed to live up to commitments once again, and those remarks, I think, are just an absolute disappointment. I don't want a response. You've had an opportunity to respond to everything today. You presented the council with, you set the time frames for decision making. You complained about the limited time for decision making. You set the forum, and the council has acted appropriately, in my view, in terms of providing the support, but the low level of discourse that advanced at the beginning of this meeting, I just think is inexcusable in terms of the attacks on two individuals who have done nothing but try to make this system work for the benefit of your court and the entire branch.
Just very briefly, I'm one of the newest members of the council. I just have to commend everybody for the hard work we have all been putting in over the last couple of months. And, yes, it was personally offensive to me to hear the attacks not only on the individuals but on the council as a whole, saying this whole thing is charade, we're trying to make an example of the San Francisco court, saying they're still charging, that nothing has changed with the council. Could not be more inaccurate from my limited perspective of the last 2 months, and I'm just honored to be a member of this body.
Thank you. Jim Penrod.
As the only San Francisco member of this council who's worked hard with the Bar Association.
No, hey.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Voting member.
Well, voting.
The midnight calls for me.
I meant the only voting member who's worked hard with the Bar Association, the community, and judges to try to achieve a solution here. I agree with Bill's comments wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm. We stand in recess for 10 minutes to take up the second matter.